We are attempting to go through the Old Testament book by book on Sunday nights, and tonight we are at the book of Joshua. In making the outline, it seemed like I just couldn't figure out a place where to stop. And so because of that, we've got a long ways to go and a short time to get there. As far as the information concerning the book, and we may end up having to drop a little bit off, but the book of Joshua is certainly an interesting book. We've completed the first five books, the Pentateuch of the Old Testament, and now we're entering into the next section of the Old Testament, that being the books of history, covering the next 12 books of the Old Testament. And those 12 books can be broken down into three divisions, if you will. We would have the books of Joshua, Judges, and Ruth, covering the history of the independent tribes. And then the books of 1 Samuel through 2 Chronicles, the history of the kingdom. And then Ezra through Esther would be a history of the return from captivity. All of that covering approximately 1,000 years in the history of the Jews. Now, those three sections are divisions that give us different forms of government for the children of Israel as well. When you have Joshua, Judges, and Ruth, you have a theocracy. Theocracy meaning God ruled at that time. And 1 Samuel through 2 Chronicles, you have a monarchy. You have the king over the United Kingdom, and then eventually, of course, the divided kingdom, where you'll have two different kings ruling at the same time. And then Ezra through Esther, we have the dependency, as it's sometimes called, because they are being ruled over by a foreign government, a foreign king. And so with that, that gives us an idea of where things are going to be going in the next 12 books as we study from the Old Testament. The theme for the book of Joshua, probably if I were to ask you what the theme would be, you would probably conclude and say it is the conquest of Canaan, and you would be correct. But really, it's more important than even the conquest. The theme for the book of Joshua actually ends up being the fidelity of God. The fact that God is honest, God keeps his promises. And that is going to be the main point behind the book of Joshua. Yes, they are going to conquer Palestine, the promised land. But the importance of the book of Joshua is even more than even that. It does demonstrate the truthfulness, the fidelity concerning God himself. The writer of the book of Joshua, from all indications, is Joshua. And we end up having the same kind of discussion concerning the book of Joshua that we had with the book of Deuteronomy. And that is, when you get to the end of the book of Joshua, this time in Joshua chapter 24, we have Joshua who dies, and then we have some things recorded after his death. And so as a result of that, some people say Joshua could not have written the book. And they use that as proof that Joshua did not write the book. But as we said concerning Moses writing the book of Deuteronomy, there are at least two possibilities as to how this could have happened. One is, for the book of Joshua anyway, that Joshua wrote all of it up until the very last chapter. And then some other inspired man, maybe one of the judges or Samuel later on, but anyway, some other inspired man wrote that last chapter concerning the death of Joshua and the death of Eleazar the high priest. Or it could be that Joshua himself wrote it, but he is writing by way of prophecy. Being inspired of God, he would have the ability to write concerning those events that are going to take place in the future, and he could write with absolute accuracy concerning them. And so either one of those are possibilities concerning the final chapter of the book of Joshua. And yet the indication is given throughout the book that Joshua is the writer of the book. I make mention concerning the fact that whoever wrote the book, the indication is, it was one of those who was alive during the time of Joshua And during the time of the wilderness wanderings and during the time of when they crossed the river Jordan and entered into the promised land, chapter 5, verse 1, speaks concerning the fact that we crossed over, that being the Jordan River at that time. In chapter 6 and in verse 25, it speaks concerning Rahab, who Rahab and her family were spared when Jericho was taken captive and conquered, that we talked about this morning. And it's stated in verse 25 concerning Rahab that Rahab the harlot and her father's household and all that she had did Joshua save alive, and she dwelt in the midst of Israel unto this day, which indicates Rahab is still alive. And if Rahab is alive, there would be no reason to conclude that Joshua is not alive, and Joshua being the writer of the book. Now, the reason we bring that out is because there are those individuals who say that the book of Joshua, just as they say concerning the book of Deuteronomy, was written many, many years later, and therefore the writer of the book did not have firsthand knowledge concerning the things that were recorded there. Well, these things, chapter 5, verse 1, chapter 6, verse 25, speak concerning the fact that if it's not Joshua, it certainly is someone who was alive at that time. And there has never been a good alternative that has been proposed for someone to have written the book of Joshua other than Joshua himself. In the closing chapter, in chapter 24 and in verse 26, there it is stated that Joshua wrote these things in a book. And the thing that we can conclude is those things that are spoken of that Joshua wrote are in fact those things recorded in the book of Joshua. The dating for the book is somewhere around 1350 BC. Some people say 1400, some say at least before 1300, and so I just kind of split it down the middle. Somewhere around 1350 BC is the time that's generally accepted for the writing of the book of Joshua, that being the time when Joshua lived. As far as the purpose of the book, we could come up with a threefold purpose, if you will, concerning the book of Joshua. The first being in order to tell the story of the conquest as well as the dividing of the promised land by the children of Israel when they come into the land. A second purpose would be in order to demonstrate that, in fact, God does keep his word, and that's what we refer to as the theme, the fidelity of God. And by that, we simply mean when you go back to the book of Genesis, in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, as well as Genesis chapter 18 and Genesis chapter 22 and Genesis chapter 26, I think it is, several times in the book of Genesis, God makes promises to Abraham and then to Isaac and then to Jacob concerning those things that are going to take place. And one of the things that God says is going to take place is he is going to give to them the promised land, this land where they are living right now, but he's not going to do it at this time. In fact, God would tell Abraham that the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full, but the indication is there will come the time when it will be full. And at that point in time, God is going to give the land of Canaan to Abraham and to his seed, to his descendants. And that is what's going to take place, even though it's going to be over 400 years from then that it's actually going to take place. And so it demonstrates that God keeps his promises. And in this land, God is going to nourish the children of Israel, the household of Jacob. He's going to nourish them and prepare them for the world to come and the seed that would come from Abraham through the nation of Judah, and that seed, of course, being Jesus Christ, whereby all nations of the earth would be blessed. Galatians chapter 4, verse 4, and Galatians chapter 3, verse 16. The book of Joshua shows that the Hebrews ultimately occupied the land that God said that they were going to occupy. And it was according to his purpose, according to his promise, and it served as proof that God does keep his word in these matters. And so we point out Joshua chapter 1, verse 6, where there it is recorded, "Be strong and of good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them." That's what God said, that they are going to divide the land. And it was the land that he promised to give them. In Joshua chapter 21, verses 43 through 45, here it is stated, "And the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. And the Lord gave them rest round about according to all that he sware unto their fathers, and there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. There failed not aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass." Now, why do we make that point? And why have I made it several times? The reason is the majority of the religious world today does not believe what those verses say. The majority of the religious world today that believes in the doctrine of premillennialism says God never did give the children of Israel all the land that he said he was going to give to them. They never possessed all the land promise. And therefore, they hold that sometime still in the future, God is then going to give to the children of Israel, give to Israel all the land that he promised to give to them. Well, Joshua says at the beginning of the book and then at the end of the book that in fact they did receive all the land. And in fact, here in verse 45 of Joshua chapter 21, he says that all of it came to pass that God said would come to pass. Now, who are we going to believe? Are we going to believe Joshua, who was there, who knew what the promise was, and Joshua said, "We did receive all the land, we did receive everything that God said he was going to give"? Or are we going to believe those who are 3,000 years past the events and who say that they never did receive it all? Well, I don't know about you, but I'm going to put my confidence in Joshua. I think he knows more about what happened back there than those on this side. And so that's why we emphasize those particular verses and emphasize that the theme of the book of Joshua is actually the fidelity of God, that God is truthful and he does keep his promises. But thirdly, the book of Joshua can also be such to show the consequences of disobeying God's will. Because Joshua chapter 21 and in verse 43 that we just read, the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. And yet, God is going to warn them that if they ever depart from his will, if they ever depart from what he has instructed them to do, that in fact they are going to be persecuted, they are going to be punished as a result of that, and therefore, as Paul would say in Romans chapter 11, verse 22, "Behold, therefore, the goodness and the severity of God." God is both good and severe, but it is our actions as to whether or not we are obeying him that determine what he is going to be like. Well, the background for the book of Joshua. The book is named after the principal character as well as the author of the book, that being Joshua himself. It is a record concerning that conquest as well as the dividing of the land covering about 50 years' time. And largely, it's a story of the various military campaigns, though it does not go into exhaustive detail concerning those battles. It does give us insight into many of them. We know from what is recorded in the book of Joshua that the taking of the promised land is going to begin with the taking of the cities of Jericho as well as the city of Ai. And the city of Jericho and the city of Ai were more or less about in the middle of the promised land. And then the children of Israel will begin their campaign to the south, taking over the southern part of Palestine. And then they will move to the northern part of Palestine in taking those areas. And that is, in essence, the military campaigns that are recorded in the book of Joshua. Concerning the man himself, for about 40 years, Joshua had been a minister or a servant to Moses as they were wandering there in the wilderness. We're introduced to Joshua in Numbers chapter 13 and in verse 8, and there his name is Hoshea, and meaning salvation. We know from Numbers chapter 13, verse 16, that Moses is going to change his name. He changes it from Hoshea to Jehoshua, whereby the meaning of the name changes from salvation to Jehovah is salvation, or the Lord is salvation, giving praise and honor to the God of heaven. He is also stated in Scripture with the name of Yeshua, which is simply an abbreviated form of Jehoshua, but slightly different in spelling because of the Hebrew to English lettering. In Hebrew, Joshua is equivalent to the Greek name of Jesus. And we have one particular occasion where that ended up causing some problems there in Hebrews chapter 4 and in verse 8, because there the name Jesus is given, but the account is actually the reference to Joshua. They're the same name, different languages, but it should actually be Joshua that is translated there in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 8, rather than the name of Jesus, to keep from causing confusion there. But God was preparing Joshua throughout this 40-year period of time as he ministered to Moses. He's preparing him for the task that no one at that time knew that he was going to be conducting. And that was that he would be the ultimate leader of the children of Israel in going in and taking the promised land. Concerning Joshua, as well, as far as his home life is concerned, we have no information. We do not know if he was married. We do not know if being married, if he had any children. Those things concerning Joshua just simply are not given to us. And there's no indication from the scriptures relating to it. And yet we do know that Joshua makes that great promise in Joshua chapter 24 and in verse 15, that as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. But to simply speak concerning one's household does not necessarily mean that they were married or that they had children. And of course, that's an argument that we also make when we come to the book of Acts as far as some of the things that are stated concerning there in the book of Acts. But Joshua first appears at Rephidim when they were to fight against the Amalekites. And he is the leader of the Israelite armies. And as a result of that, he is able to bring victory to the children of Israel, even though, as we talked about this morning in the taking of the city of Jericho, it is God who was giving the victory. It was not really that the children of Israel themselves were earning that particular right. Joshua and Caleb, of course, are two of the 12 spies that are sent in to spy out the land. And Joshua and Caleb are the only two that came back with the favorable report that, in fact, they could take the land as God had said that they were supposed to do. The other 10 said it could not be done. And they convinced the children of Israel as a whole that it could not be done. And so because they refused to do what God instructed them to do for the next 38 years, they're going to wander in the wilderness by way of punishment. And all of those who were over the age of 20 when they came out of Egyptian bondage are going to die in the wilderness. None of them are going to be allowed to enter into the promised land, with the exception of Joshua and Caleb. Joshua, at the close of chapter 24, is going to die being 110 years of age when he passes from this life. When you look at the book of Joshua, there are several keys, as we have tried to point out in each of the books. The key words for this particular book would be that of conquest and possess or possession. The key chapters, or the key verses rather, would be Joshua chapter 21, verses 43 through 45 that we read just a few moments ago. Key chapters would be chapters 23 and 24 of the book of Joshua. That Joshua charges the people in chapter 23 to be very courageous, to keep and to do all that is written in the book in the law of Moses, chapter 23 and in verse 20 or verse 6. In chapter 24 and in verse 14, he tells them to fear the Lord and to serve him in sincerity and in truth. And therefore, the keys to this particular book by way of the chapters. The key phrase in the book would be, "Choose you this day whom you will serve," as Joshua speaks to the people in his closing address to them that we have recorded in the book of Joshua, chapter 24 and in verse 15. As far as an outline of the book of Joshua, we have the events leading up to, as well as the actual conquest of the land of Canaan, covered in the first 12 chapters of the book of Joshua. We begin with an introduction to Joshua being made the leader of the children of Israel in chapter 1, and then the actual process whereby they will go through and to conquer the promised land, chapters 2 through 12. Chapter 2, the spying out the land for the second time as far as the city of Jericho in particular, where the two spies were sent. And then chapters 3 and 4, the crossing of the Jordan River on dry land, as well as the setting up of the stones as the memorial for having done such. Then chapter 5 is their preparing for battle in the promised land. Chapter 6, the taking of Jericho. Chapter 7 and 8, the problems that arose in trying to take Ai as a result of the sin that was in the camp. And then the blessings and the cursings are read before the children of Israel. Chapters 9 and 10 tell us concerning Gibeon, the Gibeonites, and how that they were crafty in order to set up an alliance with the children of Israel. And then the battles that took place with the kings of the south. Five different kings, including the king of Jerusalem, and that Joshua and the armies of Israel defeat the five kings of the south. And then chapter 12 is a summary concerning the battles of the children of Israel. Chapter 13 through chapter 22 is the dividing up of the promised land. And chapter 13 tells us concerning the inheritance of the 2.5 tribes of Israel that were on the east side of the Jordan River. Chapter 14 tells us concerning the